Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with another interview with a former Minnesota Twins player. Today, we are pleased to be able to speak with right-handed pitcher Gary Serum. Gary was signed out of one of the Minnesota Twins tryout camps and just 2 years later was pitching for the Minnesota Twins at Met Stadium. So let's let Gary tell us about his Minnesota Twins career. Gary, thank you for joining us today. You were born in Fargo, North Dakota, I believe, but you grew up in the Alexandria area. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, my mom and dad went up to Morehead to go to college, and as they were finishing up, they had me as a baby. And when my dad graduated, he got a job in Alexandria as the recreation director, and my mother was an English teacher. And so we moved to Alec, and my whole life I grew up there. When I grew up as a kid, I mean, you can bike everywhere, and we had lakes all over the place. And I know that we just had a great group of kids that I grew up with, and a lot of them went on to be really successful, you know, such as Tommy Lehman was 2 years younger than me. His mother was my eighth grade English teacher, and his dad was my insurance agent. And
really?
Yeah, and we just had a lot of great core of kids that I got to grow up with, and it was just a blast being in this little town. It was like a Norman Rockwell setting.
It's a nice area there for sure. Did you play sports in high school? What was your favorite sport?
Actually, I worked my tail off trying to play basketball my whole life, and I did half and half. It was baseball, basketball, and I did play football until I was a senior, and then I looked at all the guys that were in front of me on the line. I was the quarterback, and these guys are 200 pounds, and I said, I'm out of here. And actually, it worked out really well for our team because that year, our senior year, we went on and we won the state football championship down at Parade Stadium in 1975. I think it was just two classes back then.
Mm-hmm.
And like the quarterback that became in my position was Bob Bellevue. He ended up taking him to the States, and he got a full ride to Concordia, and when he got up there, he actually took them to the national championship in their division of college down in Findlay, Ohio. And that was fun because I was happening to be playing in Columbus for the Columbus Clippers AAA at the time, and got to go about an hour north in Findlay, and I got to see that whole game.
Well, that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, what are the odds of that happening?
I know.
What did you do after high school?
Well, I signed with Angelo Giuliani, the scout for the Twins, came up to Alexandria, and he signed me right out of high school. So my dad negotiated a full ride scholarship to St. Cloud State that the Twins paid for. But right away, I got assigned to Rookie League, which was located in Elizabethton, Tennessee. So I got on the plane, and a month after I graduated from high school and started the pro.
Was that one of the Twins tryout camps that you got signed out of?
Yeah, that I don't know how that worked, but you know, there was only three of us that ever went through that process and got up to the major leagues. It was me, Charlie Waters, who is the St. Paul Pioneer Press writer still today, and Jerry Terrell, who was a utility infielder for, and I think he still might be in baseball, either in the Kansas City organization or something, I don't know.
Yeah, I've been trying to reach him, too. I haven't been able to do that, but I knew about Jerry Terrell and yourself. I didn't know about Charlie Waters.
Yeah, he actually took me under his wing when I got called up. He sort of told me that we were, you know, both Minnesotans, both went through the tryout, both pitchers. And at that time, he was traveling with the team as the sports writer, along with Mike Gilfan, who's, you know, the stretch on KQ.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we got along really well together and went out together there, you know, and went to different cities. And it's nice to have somebody you could lean on.
What's it like in Elizabethan? That's you know, from what I've heard, the players stay with families and that kind of a thing.
Yeah, you actually fly into, I think, Tri-Cities, which is Johnson City, Tennessee. And what surprised me is that you're pretty well, at least back then, there wasn't much accommodations for and or even any help with the twins back in the Calvin Griffith era. It's like no one picked me up at the airport. Here I was 18 years old. You know, I never really traveled much on my own, and I had to fend for myself and find my way from the airport into this little town in Elizabeth, and which is way on the east side up there in the Point, way up in the mountains.
Okay.
And it's just a little town, can't remember the size, but they are totally behind, you know, have a really nice ballpark and just a little quaint town. And like you said, when you get there, families will put you up, you know, and their mom would feed us a couple times a day and give us a good clean bedroom and stuff. And we would be there, obviously, half the time you're on the road, so we weren't on them, you know, 24/7.
Sure.
And then at night, we're at the ballpark from 4 in the afternoon to 10, 11 o'clock at night. So I guess we didn't put them out too much, but it was really nice.
Still, yeah. After signing with the Twins, and you pitched in relief in Elizabethan, I believe, but then the following year in 76, you became primarily a starter. Did you prefer starting or relieving?
I actually preferred starting. When I got called up, well, in 75, I only got to play like 2 months in Elizabeth. And so I was, in 76, I go to Melbourne, Florida for the spring training with all five groups there. You had Elizabeth, and it was a rookie league, and then you had the California League, Wisconsin Rapids were the two Class A's. Then you had Double A, the Orlando Twins, and then at the time it was Tacoma Twins on the Pacific Coast League.
Okay.
So we all stayed at the Melbourne Airport Hotel, and then they had like a cafeteria and a clubhouse area, and then four fields that we played at in Melbourne. So we all mingled amongst each other and played down there.
Yeah. It's a little different than what it is now with the minor leaguers at the same ballpark as the major leaguers nowadays.
Yeah, it's like back then we had the Orlando at Tinker Field was where the major league park was, and all the guys were there.
Yeah,
today you go down to Fort Myers, and it's quite the complex. What we used to have. We used to have barracks. I mean, my rookie year, we had five guys staying in one room at that airport hotel.
Jeez.
And Johnny Castino, who actually got called up and became Rookie of the Year 1 year.
Yeah.
Him, Rick Soulfield, was in that room. He got called up. He was like a shortstop. I think Greg Fields was another one. He was out of West Palm Beach, a pitcher. I can't remember the fifth guy, but man, we had cots in there, and we're just, you know, elbow to elbow.
Wow, that's amazing. What pitches did you throw, Gary?
I just had a sinker and a slider. In fact, I didn't really have much of a. I just had a sinking fastball. In that second year, I ended up getting tendonitis in my shoulder because they're trying to change my delivery. And so, in the meantime, I got hurt with that. So I stayed down in Florida for 2 months, and they had an extended spring training. When you're staying down there where it's warm, and then when you get healthier, you start pitching.
Okay.
But they actually had a extended spring training where you got to play games. And we were teamed up with the Boston Red Sox, and they had this pitching coach, Al Jackson. He was a left-handed pitcher in his day, and he taught me how to be more of a control pitcher and throw a tighter slider. And I tell you, after he did that with me, I went from Class A, Double A, and Triple A in a year.
Boy.
Huge difference for me, meeting that guy.
He used to pitch for the Mets, didn't he?
Might have.
I think so.
He was a little black guy. I mean, great guy. We used to sit and watch, like, Saturday baseball games together and stuff like that. Talked a lot about baseball.
In 77, you were back in the relief role, and you must have pitched extremely well because the Twins called you up. Can you share the circumstances of that call-up with us and how you found out that you were on your way to the big leagues?
Well, yeah, actually my first full year was I went back to Elizabethan, and then the extended spring training, and then halfway through I got called up to Wisconsin Rapids and the Midwest League there. And so then the next year, my second full year, I go to spring training, and Johnny Goro was the manager in AA at the time, and he said, Gary, if you want to go from a starter to reliever, I'll take you on AA. And I said, in a minute, let's do it. So I got a chance to do that, and within 2 months, AAA needed a right-handed reliever, and there was two of us, and so they chose me to go up there. And when I got up there, just everything fell into my, I was just really lucky. I mean, my first appearance, Del Wilbur was our coach, and it was bases loaded. He throws me in there with no outs, and I give up a throw pitch, and the guy hits a pee down third base. The guy nags it, throws it home, home to first. Del Butera was there. Catcher then at that time.
Okay.
And so I got a double play when it could have easily been a double and two runs score and we lose the game. But
sure.
And then the next guy struck out, and it just seemed like that whole month I just couldn't do any wrong. Not that that was because of me. It was just a lot of luck. I think I had like 4 wins and 5 saves and 10 appearances. And TK was our manager at the time. Well, he was our first baseman. And Del Wilbur was our coach. And then a month after that, that I was up there, it was like July 17th or something like that, the apparent club up in Minnesota, two right-handed pitchers got hurt. And so here, and they happen to be right-handed relievers.
Hmm.
So they had a vote, Calvin Griffith and the head scout and Brophy and Rance, and I think 4 out of 5 voted for me to come up, I guess. And so it was just pure luck. You know, get at the right place at the right time. And so how I found out about it was I was on the road in AAA, on the road, I think it was Salt Lake City, or Tucson maybe. Tucson, I think. And May was my roommate, and it was Saturday morning. We're just waiting for Tony Kubik and Joe Garagiola do the play-by-play for the Saturday game at 11 noon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And those old phones in the hotel that was blinking the yellow light, and so he called down there and to the front desk, and it just said Holly, Tacoma, Serum, Oakland. And so May looked at me and says, I think you just got called up to the bigs. And I go, why? And he says, well, there's a guy named Jeff Holly that's playing up there. And then he's getting sent down, and the Twins happen to be playing a doubleheader tomorrow in Oakland. And so I think you're supposed to go to Oakland. So we get a hold of Buck Chamberlain, who's our trainer or clubhouse manager. You know, they wore like 4 hats back then.
Sure.
And he says, yeah, Gary, you just got called up. You got 10 minutes to get down here and get your ticket and get to the airport, and then you have to report out to Oakland. You fly into San Fran. And they have a doubleheader they want you to be in uniform for. So here you have an apartment and a car in Tacoma. You're on the road. And you got 10 minutes to get to an airport and just keep moving on with your life. So it's
hard.
Yeah.
It's a hard life.
So when I got to San Fran, you know, here I am, 20 years old. I happen to be, now I'm the youngest kid in the major leagues at that point. I had no idea where Oakland was, so I jumped in a cab and went all the way across the bridge over to Oakland, turned my voucher into Howard Fox the next day, and he about flipped, saying, $75? He said, why didn't you take this bus over here and catch the line of that? And I looked at him dumbfounded, like, what? Why didn't you come and pick me up?
Yeah.
So, I get out of the cab, and the first guy I see is Rod Carew in his $400 suit jumping in a cab for the night, and I go, man, what am I doing here? Because I grew up in Alexandria, and I got to go down these knothole gangs, you know, and stuff
in
the field and watched him and Herman and Tony, and so I go through the hotel lobby, and there's this guy that comes up to me, so you the rookie? And I go, yeah, and here it was Tony Oliva.
Oh, is that right?
Unbelievable. I just, so I got to that room, and tried to sleep that night and got to the Coliseum. I was just amazed how big it was. And, you know, all these guys, Rami, Rod, and we had Larry Heisel and Disco Danny Ford and Lyman Bostock and Butch Weiniger and Roy Smalley and Dave Golds.
Wow.
I mean, these guys, you know, I just, being a living. This is the bigs.
That's for sure.
So I go get dressed and do the batting practice, and we had a doubleheader. The first game, Gene Mock called down to the bullpen and had me warm up, but I never did get in. But that's how they do it. Once you get up, they try to get your feet wet right away so you don't think about it. So I didn't get in that night, but then we flew home, and so I called my mom and dad and said, guess where I'm at? And they says, you're in the bigs. And I go, how'd you know? Well, Sid Hartman had it in the column the day before, but we didn't want to call and jinx you.
Nice. You made your big league debut on July 22nd at Met Stadium in relief against the Angels just 2 years after you signed your first pro contract. The first batter, I think Randy Mullinex, hit a single, but you retired the next six batters, two of them on strikeouts. Tell us about that first big league appearance.
Well, I remember it to the day, even though, what is it, like 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Rance Mullinex, he's a left-handed batter for the Angels, and he hit a P-pass Rod Drew, and Disco Danny Ford came in, fielded it, threw it to Rod. Rod walks to the pitching mound and says, hey, Rook, I thought I could get that for you. You know, we should have got it, which I know he couldn't have.
Yeah.
And he just says, you'll be good. Just keep it down, and we'll get him out for you. And he just really calmed me down the way he said it.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, yeah, the next two innings, I got the six guys out, and it was like a mop-up relief appearance. And you just don't feel the ground that you're walking on at that point.
Did your parents get to see you in that appearance?
I don't think so, but I did. My college buddy up at St. Cloud was having a house party and happened to hear Herb Carneal in the seventh inning say, next inning we're bringing in this rookie Gary Serum. And so Joe Murphy, who lived in Bloomington and had a house there, popped in a cassette and he actually taped it for me and saved it, and I still have it today.
Nice.
Yeah. It was Frank Quillacy and Herb Carneal that did the play-by-play back then, and Harmon Killebrew did the TV with those Hams beer commercials.
Yep. Yep. In 1978, you were with the Twins all season, and the Twins turned you into a starter again. Tell us about that.
Well, the team didn't start out very well. We had a 9-game losing streak. We're back out in Oakland, and Gene Mock came up to me and says, well, I've tried everybody else, Gary. I'm going to try you. It's like, thanks
Thank
for the
you.
So I went out there and actually pitched a complete game, and I think I won it, I don't know, 4-1 or something like that. I gave up one run and ended up staying in the starting rotation the rest of the year and ended up 9-9.
What, you know, to go from a reliever to starter like that and pitch a complete game is, you know, just don't see that happen too often. What about pitch counts back in those days? Did you guys even think about that?
You know, we did keep the pitch count, but I don't think they do it as strict of a rule. Gene Mock's rule was, you know, as you get closer to the end of the game, like say the ninth inning, it's your inning unless you give up a walk. He hated walks. He hated, you know, dealing with pitchers and their control. He's so much into his offense. He has a great offensive mind. And so he would just prance back and forth in the, you know, the dugout until the defense got him out so he can start figuring out how statistically he can score a run the next inning.
Huh. What was he like to play for?
Well, like I said, he really spent a lot of time with his position players in the batting and stuff like that. The pitchers, he pretty well just left us on our own. We had a really good pitching coach named Don McMahon my first year up there, and he worked with us, and he had videos of us so we could see how we're doing. And then the next year, he got let go, and we ended up with Camilo Pascual, who was a great guy, but he just, you know, he couldn't communicate, you know, like Don McMahon did. And
sure.
So I think that was what really hurt me, being still a young kid, 21 years old, that second year, and it would have been nice to have a Don McMahon work with you day in and day out.
He was a pretty nice reliever for the Braves when I first started following baseball.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Gene Mock just wanted to control, I think, the whole network, which I don't know what went wrong with Don McMahon, or maybe he just wanted out. I don't know. I think he ended up going out to California and became a rep for Rawlings Gloves, I heard. Yeah. Then I think he passed away a few years back.
Yeah, he did. In 1979, you were not as effective, and you only pitched in 20 games with the Twins. What happened? Was there an injury?
No. We started spring training in 79, and we ended up getting Jerry Kuzman, great guy, another Minnesota boy, and pushed, and then he went out. Gene Mogwin got this pitcher named Paul Hartzell on the Angels, so that pushed me out of the starting rotation. And so I went in the bullpen, and about 3 weeks into the season, we're in Detroit, and he had Mike Marshall, the reliever from the Dodgers, the screwball pitcher, work out on the sideline, and he ended up signing him right then and there, and he was in uniform, and so that pushed me even further back in the bullpen. So I went from, I think it was like 188 innings to maybe 50, and I just didn't get much time in.
Right, yeah, I was just wondering why your innings decreased so much. You ended up spending 80 and 81 in the Twins minor league system, and then in 1982 you ended up with the Yankees. Were you part of that Roy Smalley for Greg Gagne, Ron Davis, and Paul Boris trade?
Yes, I was, and you wouldn't believe how I found that, how I found out how I got traded. I broke camp in spring training, and at the time I had an Airstream trailer and a car, and so I just went from city to city, so I didn't have to deal with these utilities and apartments and stuff like that. So I had I took off the day before the team and got up to Toledo, Ohio, and I was meeting Bob Veselic, who's my signed roommate, and we're going to hit the road. So we met at a breakfast restaurant, and he saw me pull up, and he met me at the door. He came from inside the restaurant. He said, "Have you read the paper yet?" And I go, "No." And so he pulls out the Toledo Blade, and here was my picture. Was it said Toledo Hurdler sent to Columbus. So,
what a way to find out!
Unbelievable! I just couldn't believe it. And I knew right then and there my career was over. You know, it's one thing if you could get traded to, back then, like Cleveland or somebody, but the Yankees, back then George Steinbrenner just would not call up anybody unless you're a marquee millionaire player.
Yep.
So I went down to Columbus, and I actually had a really good year. I was 9 wins and 1 loss as a reliever, and I had like the third best ERA on the team. I couldn't do any better. And then the next spring training, I was really disappointed that I didn't get called up to, you know, at least the big club spring training to get looked at. Billy Martin, nothing. And so I go through spring training, and they're saying, "Well, we're going to start you in Double A." So I go from 9-1 in Triple A to where they want to start me in a lower class. And back then, you know, at least just an average ball player wasn't making much money. My top salary was $30,000. And I already had the chance, and I was really lucky to even get to the major leagues, got almost 3 years in, and I just said, that's enough. I'm not going to go down to a Texas league and ride 14-hour bus rides again and do that. So I asked for my plane ticket back home and came back to the Twin Cities and started a new life.
And that was going to be my next question was, you know, at the age of 25, you walked away from baseball.
Yeah, I was just in the wrong organization. And when I was playing with the AAA Yankees, we had guys like Don Mattingly on there and Butch Hobson from the old Boston Red Sox third baseman. We had Bobby Bonds, you know, Barry Bonds' dad, and Les Fields. And, we had a really good, I mean, it was a major league team, actually. And Mattingly had been there a couple of years. Him and Wade Boggs, who was with Todd Tuckett for a couple of years, either of those guys could get called up.
Jeez.
When they finally did, look what they did. They just took forever for Steinbrenner to let anyone have a chance to get there.
When you look back on your big league career, Gary, how would you describe yourself as a major league pitcher?
You know, I was just a control pitcher. You know, if I got the ball up, I got hit. The year that I did go 9-9, I guess I was your good average pitcher at the time, and if you get a chance to get a lot of innings, then you can stay mentally sharp and know what you're doing. So, but to get from a tryout camp to the major leagues, it takes a lot of luck.
Yeah, it's a lot, you know, it takes skill, but you got to be at the right place at the right time, like you mentioned earlier, too.
Yes.
What was the best thing about being a big league pitcher and a professional baseball player, Gary?
Well, the chance to, as a 20-year-old kid, to be able to fly all over the country and see all these different cities and what the country is all about. I mean, the experience in that was unbelievable. You couldn't pay for that.
Yeah. Do you have any single special big league memory that stands out when you think back on your baseball career?
Well, I guess, you know, the day I called up, how that all happened.
Mm-hmm.
Walking into these major league ballparks for the very first time as a player was just really an awesome feeling. You know, you go to Yankee Stadium, you take a bus through the Bronx and go through these old gates and this old clubhouse and the long, long tunnel, and you come out on the third base side and then you see this huge stadium, you know, with the skyline in the background and these big Panasonic speakers blaring out music. You got the monuments in center field at the time. Or you go to Boston, you have that big green monster staring at you. It's a pitcher right there, 10 feet behind you.
Seems right behind you, yeah. That's had to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, every stadium had its own neat little thing. Kansas City had the waterfalls.
Mm-hmm.
Milwaukee had that, you know, guy slide down the thing and then beer mug and bubbles come out. And Anaheim had the big A and the King Dome back then. That's, I think, where I got my first maybe that was my first win. I think I came in relief for Jeff Zahn, and now the King Dome is gone. I don't think any of these stadiums that I played in are the same anymore. Toronto was an exhibition football stadium.
Yeah.
And Milwaukee's changed. They all changed. And if there is one that's still there, it'd be like Kansas City and Anaheim, but they've filled in the outfield.
Yep.
So differently.
Changed it. What did you do after you left baseball and came back to Minnesota?
Well, I kept going to college and just tried to find myself. You know, all my other high school buddies have gotten 4 years of college and they moved on and do what they're doing. And I just was trying to find myself, so I did a lot of different things. I sold insurance, sold advertising, sold solar in Minnesota. Tried doing that.
Wow, you were before your time.
Yeah, and then I ended up selling cars at a Lincoln Ford dealership for about 5 years. And then I finally got into the restaurant bar business, and that's where I've been now for the last 21 years up in Anoka, Minnesota.
And again, that right on my next question. I was going to say, today you own Serum's Good Time Emporium in Anoka. How did you end up there?
Well, that's a long story. I had invested in this janitorial company where we had crews clean office buildings, and
sure,
this gentleman that I invested in only came up with about half of what I invested in, and he was from the Anoka area, and he had found this little place called Backstreet Pizza, a little family pizza place, and he said, if you can get a liquor license, I think this would be a great place to go, and then I would be square with you on what I owe you. And so, it's sort of a roundabout way how I got in this business, but I really wanted it. Traveling all over the country, and you know, all the time that we had to, or after ball games and staying in hotels, I got to see a lot of restaurants. So, in fact, the Good Time Emporium part, you know, most places have sports bar and grill or something like that, and when I was in Orlando at Tinker Field, all the guys, after practice, would go to this place called Rosie O'Grady's Good Time Emporium. And I always just thought that was a cool name, so that's where I got it.
Isn't the restaurant business a tough business?
Well, it can be. I mean, I bet you in my 21 years, there's been 3,000 bars and restaurants have closed in the Seven County metro area.
Sure.
And even in the Anoka area, the two or three that I have been here have changed owners 3 to 7 times. And a couple big ones up here closed recently. It can be tough. You got to have the right niche and know your demographics. I think in today's market, you know, it's really tough if you're trying to do the high-end stuff like steaks and seafood.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is just more of a blue-collar, finger food kind of a place where known statewide for chicken wings, which is a... If you had time, I can tell you that story, how I came up with that.
Sure.
Well, I was down in Florida Keys on this Sunset Catamaran cruise, and I was talking to this couple about baseball, and the cruise was almost done, and this guy behind me says, I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm from Hilton Head, South Carolina. Big Atlanta Braves fan. It happened to be, you know, where the Twins and the Braves were playing.
Okay.
And, we hit it off really well, and by the end of the conversation, the trip, we ended up going down to Wall Street and walking up and down to these different places and exchanging stories, and he said, well, and I told him that I bought this pizza place, and it's just pizza, spaghetti, and lasagna, and he said, well, if you ever want to expand, I've got this Wild Wing Cafe down in Hilton Head, and he says, I've been to Minnesota, I have no inkling to go there again. He said that he was in the TV business, and Stan Hubbard up here in the Twin Cities had him and doing business, and he got in his limo and drove him out to the, he couldn't pronounce, he was saying this Indian name like Minnetonka, whatever, I said Minnetonka, and he said, yeah, he said he drove his limo right out in the middle of it on this ice with all these outhouses, and he got out of the limo and knocked on the door to show me what it's like inside one of them, and he said, so he, you know, the guy answered it and told him what he was doing and all that. So they get back in the limo and they're driving back down to Golden Valley, and along the road he sees this guy with a beard with frost another 2 feet further than that, and he says, there's no way I'm going back to that. You can have that whole area.
I'll be darned.
So a couple years later, I saved up enough money and called him. I said, Cecil, you man of your word? He said, absolutely. So him and his wife, I put them up at the house, and they walked through my kitchen and said, this is what you're going to need, and set me all up with the vendors, and he says, well, now when you get it all installed and set up, we'll come up with our kitchen manager, and so we did, and that's how it all started.
Wow, that's an interesting story.
Yeah, so I think I've gotten lucky a couple times in my day, you know, getting called up to the Twins the way I did, and then finding this guy that really showed me the ropes.
Well, I've never been to your place, but I'm going to have to get up there. I live in Plymouth, so I'm not too far away.
Oh, yeah, just come right up 169.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do that, because we have some relatives that live up by Ramsey, and so we're heading up 169 pretty regularly.
Oh, yeah, you have to go right by my place to get to Ramsey almost.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you enjoy doing in your spare time, Gary?
Well, I like to do a lot of boating. I do a lot of golf. A lot of my regulars, there's a golf course in Anoka here called Greenhaven. It's a city-owned golf course, so we golf there two or three times a day during the summer.
Okay.
And then I have a place down in Florida just north of Fort Myers, so we like to boat down there when you get a chance to go out there.
Do you go just primarily boating, or do you go fishing, or...?
Well, you know, I grew up in Alexandria, and I fished when I was a kid a lot. And now I just like to get out on the water and just boat around.
Okay. Do you go to any of the Twins games? Do you still follow baseball?
You know, I got to go to the opener of the new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
With my U.S. food rep took me there. That was fun. And about two or three times a year I like to go down there.
It's a beautiful stadium.
It is. It beats the old Met Stadium with the big old concourse that smell like Ham's beer, Bloomington.
How did you enjoy playing in Met Stadium?
Well, I liked it. I mean, there wasn't anything better, you know, at the time. So, yes. You know, you weren't comparing it to a Target Field and all that. It was a good stadium, I think, for pitching. We were really good. There's a lot of, being a pitcher, each stadium, if there's one position in any major sport, it's the pitcher that has a different, where he's actually performing his duties can change than any other sport at any other position, because, like, when you go out to California and Anaheim, back then they had Frank Tanana and Nolan Ryan. Well, they would have that pitching mound 10 feet high. You know, so they could push off with their power drive and drive it down with their fastballs 100 miles an hour, where me, I was more of a three-quarter arm pitcher, and I was more of a finesse where I wanted to keep it low to the ground. Well, at the old Met, we had the right size mound where you start lower to the mound, or to the ground.
Okay.
I know Cleveland was the same way. I had really good luck there, and Milwaukee and Kansas City. But some stadiums, they just had the mound so different, it's hard. I think that's why you have a lot of people, if you ever look statistically, the first inning is one of the hardest innings for pitchers to get out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think if you look, the second hardest inning would probably be the fifth. I just think that's because it's such a mental thing where if you get through five innings, you are the pitcher of record.
Yeah.
So that's my theory.
So you're saying some of these stadiums, you know, the mound wasn't the same everywhere?
It's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And it's in the rule book, but there's no way. At least back then, it might be different today because, I mean, there is so much money in the game today, it's unbelievable.
Sure. I to be honest, I didn't know that you lived in the Twin Cities, and I ended up getting your name from Doug Gladstone, who wrote a book called A Bitter Cup of Coffee back in 2010, I believe. It was about 874 major leaguers who played between 1947 and 1979, but were not in the majors long enough to qualify for a pension. Were you one of those players, Gary?
Yeah, I was. In fact, he's the one that actually called me right after a high school buddy of mine read a little blurb in Sports Illustrated that these guys might get a pension coming up. And so it had been like 2 or 3 months that I had read that little blurb in Sports Illustrated. I can't remember what the month was. And then lo and behold, this guy just called me and said, this is such and such, and you're going to be one of the guys that actually gets this pension. I said, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
But back in my day, you had to have 4 years to be vested. And after 1982, which, that, you know, I wasn't back up to the major leagues, then you're vested from day one. But I think it was still it was rated like on a four-year plan.
Okay.
You know, like if you played 1 year, you'd get one-fourth of a pension of a four-year guy.
Okay, a quarter type thing.
Yep. So I had just under 3 years, so I didn't get it. I didn't qualify for it. And but even before me, you go back into the 60s, I think you'd have 10 years in. So I, you know, wasn't feeling that sorry for myself. And you know.
Nevertheless, it's, you know, with the money that's in baseball today, you know, they, I think they should be taking better care of the players that came before them and, you know, made a lot of what they're getting today possible.
Yes, I know that just in my 7 years, minor league, major league, I know that we went through two strikes. So some of those guys really did pay their duties for these guys to be where they're at today.
Yeah, you know, now you've got the minimum is getting close to $500,000.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
It is. It really,
I mean, our top guy was Rod Carew, and he had 7 batting titles, and his salary at that time was $300,000.
I remember, you know, following the game when Harmon first went over $100,000.
Yep. And when I got traded to the Yankees, and you see those guys, $1 million each, you know, almost every position, so it's crazy.
Really is. Well, Gary, I'd like to thank you very much for spending your time with us today. I really enjoyed chatting and talking about your career with you.
Well, I appreciate the call. I enjoy it. It's fun to reminisce.